We're back for part two of our episode on overcoming barriers to mental health. I'm Hannah Stanley, the host of On Social Health and Change, brought to you by Adler University. With me is Lee Johnson-Migalski, professor of psychology. Lee is an expert on Adlerian psychology. And before we start, and welcome Lee, I want to ask everyone to take a moment to hit subscribe if you have not already so that you don't miss a moment. Lee, thank you so much for joining us today. Can you start by explaining what makes Adlerian psychology different?
Sure. Well, I think what makes Adlerian psychology different is that when we're trying to understand people, we really look at the context that they're in, whether it's what kind of family, what kind of culture they grew up in, as well as the current context that they're in. And really, Adlerians, when we're looking at mental illness, we really see it's people really not understanding how to make sense of what's going on and how to overcome some stressor that they're currently dealing with. And so we really try to help them figure out a new way to operate, whether it's changing how they're perceiving the situation and changing the circumstances.
All right. So when you do that, do you consider, you do consider the outside sources as
Definitely.
Well, instead of what's just internally happening?
Definitely. And so it's, as much as we can, we try to help the client see whether if they're experiencing discrimination because either of a diagnosis. So for example, a lot of people who are diagnosed with mental illness have a lot of problems getting a job. And there's a lot of discriminatory practices that go on. And so if they're not recognizing or don't know that there are a lot of people who are diagnosed with mental illness have trouble finding a job, they might blame themselves, saying, I'm inadequate, I'm the one that doesn't have the right skills to get a job, when we help them see, no, actually, it's the larger context. So it's not just you. And so what do we help you do to try to manage that or change that?
Okay, so it's not necessarily that they're unqualified, it's that people know, they're aware that they have been diagnosed with mental illness and are therefore not bringing them aboard.
Right. And so how stigma works is that we as humans might see certain behaviors, whether it's a different type of skill sets or different social interactions, and we might then interpret that through our stereotypes and then stigmatize someone, oh, they're mentally ill. So for example, a lot of people might see a homeless person on the street and assume that they have a mental illness, where I think that if any of us were without a house and we're constantly having to be vigilant about being robbed or the police picking us up because we're in a place we're not supposed to be, we might be looking around our shoulders consistently, but some people might think, oh, that person's paranoid. Where if you really understand the context is that that's not probably maybe paranoia, that's a healthy reaction to being in a situation where people don't want you there.
So based on that, how does it change how you treat your clientele?
And so we would really help the client to stop blaming themselves or what they call kind of self-stigma.
Uh-huh.
And then that can alleviate some of just the stress and them feeling bad. And then as an Adlerian psychologist, we're often trying to work and change larger systems. So, for example, when I worked in a hospital emergency room, I had a lot of clients that came in with mental illness. And I really noticed a discrepancy, particularly if you were non-white and you had not much money, you were more likely to be put in restraints by the medical staff versus if you were if you came in and you looked like you had money and you're more likely white, you would be put in a better hospital bed within the emergency room, because the stereotypes that we have that are often unconscious kind of filter and help us decide our behavior. And so what I did in the emergency room is I would let the doctors know and point out, you know, he really doesn't need to be in restraints. He's not showing any signs of violence. I know that he's maybe an African-American homeless man, but he hasn't shown any violence, which would beget the medical order to put in restraint.
So then you were fighting with the stereotypes.
Right.
And while there was an obvious or a perceived mental illness that you were dealing with, that the patient had or
right.
was experiencing at that moment, you were then trying to be the advocate and get past those stereotypes.
Right, right.
So what the medical staff was sometimes doing,
right.
I wasn't
not
there.
Not everyone would
right.
do that, you know.
What they were sometimes doing was just kind of putting it in quotes as they're crazy.
Right, right. And I had another example of a woman who was in a state psychiatric facility, and I did all sorts of neuropsychological testing on her. And she was experiencing a lot of hallucinations, so she was hearing things that weren't there. But because in order to get put in a psychiatric specialized facility, you need to go through a regular emergency room, well, they never did a regular medical check, and we found out when she failed the hearing test, which was part of the neuropsychological battery, she had an eraser that was embedded in her ear. And because she didn't understand what was going on, it was making her hallucinations much worse. And so once we got her medical treatment, she was no longer so stressed. And so her hallucinations really decreased after we took her care of her medically. And so Adlerians really try to help and look at the holism, if you will, of the situation, taking care of the mind and the body and the whole situation to try to help people.
And because of that, where it's not just, oh, they're crazy.
Right.
And again, I say that with quotes.
Right.
That's not what I'm saying in any right. manner. Can you explain how that can really affect mental health as a whole?
Right.
Where they're fearing maybe.
Right. So you mean you're wondering how the term crazy affects mental health?
Yeah. Or just the fact that they're concerned they might just be written off as, oh, she or he is crazy.
Right. Right. So I think we can see it in a number of avenues. So you could have someone that's already diagnosed with something. And so then they're more likely to maybe not feel comfortable going in situations because they're worried people are going to see them as crazy. Mm-hmm. So then they're staying alone more, which we know people who are alone and lonely can more likely feel bad about themselves. And so it kind of can beget more stress and more troubles. On the flip side, if people who aren't really showing any kind of difficulties but might start to struggle. So, for example, we think about the stereotype about how if you have any kind of mental illness, then you're crazy and that you can't function. And a particular policy around that is, for example, in Illinois, once you've been psychiatrically hospitalized, you can't own a gun. And so I worked with a lot of police officers, as well as I worked with a lot of youth that dealt with a lot of police officers. And so there's a high rate of suicide with police officers as well as the military. Mm-hmm. And so you can imagine if your profession is about having a gun, you're not going to go get treatment maybe in the beginning because you're going to be viewed crazy. And then it gets to the point of no return. And then you might unknowingly feel that suicide is the only option.
Because they feel that they wouldn't be able, if it did get to the point where they would be hospitalized
right.
under psychiatric care, they wouldn't then be able to own a gun.
Right.
Therefore, they couldn't do their job.
Right. Or they would have to do it in a different way, which is not how they would want to do their job in anyways.
So then they would put off treatment, seeking treatment at initial stages
right.
because of fear, when actually it's possible if they got treatment earlier,
right.
they wouldn't need to progress to that point.
Right. And so, and as an Adlerian psychologist and someone at Adler University, we also take a look at what are these larger laws that maybe we need to change. So when I was thinking today, when we think about people that get DUIs, right, after the third DUI, you lose your license, but then you can take classes and you can go ahead and get the opportunity to have your license back again. Why is it that if someone, you know, has been psychiatrically hospitalized once, that means you can never have a gun again?
Maybe when they were 15.
Right. And maybe there were circumstances, you know, because also our society also says there's certain ways that, for example, that we should grieve or not grieve. And particularly men really struggle with, we don't teach men how to manage emotions. The only emotion we allow in North American society for many men is anger. Mm-hmm. Right. And so then what do you do when you're angry? You often, the adrenaline's running, you act. And then that's why we can often see that men more lethally are able to kill themselves.
So so interesting to think about how this spreads out.
Right.
The stigma is definitely something that I've known my entire life.
Right.
You know, when people would seek help or it would be gossiped about.
Right.
Has that diminished?
I think it has in some communities, but maybe not in all communities. So, for example, in some very Christian religious communities or in other faith-based organizations, they might view that you really need to go to your religious and spiritual leader, or that if you feel any sadness, then you are not being the type of religious person that you should be. And so
you don't have strong enough faith.
You don't have strong enough faith, if you will, to get through this. And so I think it is getting better, but there certainly we can improve that in many ways.
It actually is a point where I will give credit to celebrity.
Right.
Because while they're not great necessarily influences on other things, it is something where they openly talk about the fact that they go to counseling or they seek therapy or,
right,
or they've sought help.
Right. And I think that that's probably really helped with people opening up and talking about that they have had problems. And that's what a lot of the research about stigma has said. And a lot of stigma research says that one option is for people to kind of come out that they have mental illness or they have struggled and that they have recovered. We've seen that in regards to even with the media, when we look at gay, lesbian, transgendered people, is that there's become a lot more acceptance about different types of sexual orientations and identities given the media. And also with it's been great with businesses as well. So there's been a lot of makeup companies that have targeted and said, if you buy this lipstick, we'll raise money for HIV awareness. I mean, when we think about when the HIV crisis first came about, that would have never been heard of.
Never.
And what if we could have a business, you know, have enough strength and to say, let's commit to, if you buy this product, then we'll raise money for suicide with youth or to stop trauma. Or, I mean, you can imagine then the stigma that could be broken, because ultimately it's about changing the stereotypes and the perceptions. And the research has said when you have a really targeted approach, whether it's with NAMI, there was a television show called Wonderland that showed people with serious mental illness in a very poor light. And what NAMI, the National Alliance of Mentally Ill, targeted, wrote the producers of that show, wrote all the advertisers, and they really helped get the show off the air. And so if we want to break particular stereotypes, they say having a targeted approach is the best way to go.
How early can we talk about mental health with kids? Because I feel like generationally,
right,
if this is something that becomes accepted, like mom goes to seek to see a therapist, and it really helps her deal with frustrations or whatever. How early should we make this part of our "this is normal" vernacular?
Right. Well, I think that we're already starting to. So, you know, Adler years ago in Vienna, he used to hold these things called open family forum, and where he had families on stage and would talk about common behavioral problems that kids have, and would have all these families in the audience. And he would help everyone see that a lot of people have problems putting your kids to bed or saying no to your kid. And we know that when you have more structured parenting and you help kids manage their emotions when they're younger, it'll lead to less emotional problems later. And we're also seeing that in the media today. So in a lot of kids' shows, because I have a 4.5-year-old daughter, you see on Sesame Street, you see on Daniel Tiger, a lot of this social emotional learning focus and teaching kids how to speak for their emotions, how to manage their emotions. And so I think that's really going to help us.
So we're already introducing it.
We're already introducing it, where, you know, I'm going to show my age, but I used to watch Bugs Bunny and I just used to see them get splattered by a piano. No one was talking to me how to talk about when you're angry or you're sad.
Or how you felt after your Roadrunner was splattered by a piano.
Exactly. And so I think that, you know, we're really doing a better job to introduce the concept of emotions and that how to calm yourself down to really help kids manage in a better way.
So for someone listening or someone who feels that they have a friend who's expressed that they want to seek help.
Right.
Or as simply as go and talk to someone.
Right.
But they might be fearing a stigma. How would you suggest they approach that?
Right. Well, I would first remind them that if they wanted to get help, to let them know that whether you're seeing a psychologist or a social worker or a counselor, is that we all have to take an oath of confidentiality. And so no one will know if you're going to get treatment in any way, and that there's only very rare exceptions, and that's in the case of safety, that we would need to get someone else involved.
Okay, so like threats for violence.
Exactly,
like
exactly. And if they feel like they, you know, the internet's great now where it has lots of resources of different clinicians and psychologists available. So there's the Illinois Psychological Association. If they want an Adlerian, there's alfredadler.org, or, you know, the Adler School has been around for over 50 years. So we have a lot of clinicians throughout the country as well.
Thank you so much for your suggestions and your time today. Appreciate your expertise. Be sure to join us. Stay tuned for part three, when we are going to talk about the movement to grant prescriptive authority to psychologists. Hannah Stanley, this is part two on social health and change, brought to you by Adler University. And please, of course, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss all of our segments. Thanks so much for listening.